This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
One of the great, great, great performances of all time, but where does it rank and where do we go now? Carlin, 800-919-3776. On Twitter, it's at Chris Carlin. And of course, on Instagram, you can check us out at That Guy Carlin. By all means, check in early, check in often. Let's make it happen. Over the next 3.5+ hours, Andy Martino will join us at the bottom of the next hour to talk everything regarding the Yankees. We'll talk about his new book, Out Cheated, regarding the Astros scandal, which is outstanding. If you have not picked it up yet, you are making a mistake if you are a baseball fan, especially with Father's Day right around the corner. And later in the show, Frank Isola from the Yes Network will join us as well. I can't get over what I saw last night. And what I saw was one of the greatest individual performances in the history of New York sports. And frankly, one of the greatest individual performances in the history of the NBA playoffs. Now, it remains to be seen at what level we will regard Kevin Durant's performance in the future based on whether or not the Nets do win this series. I know it seems like a foregone conclusion at this point that they will, but haven't we gone a little bit back and forth throughout the course of this series? So perhaps it's a little premature to say that. After 2 games, it was Nets in a walk. After 4 games, it was, they're in some trouble, and they're not going to have Kyrie and potentially not James Harden. And then they get Harden back, and then they have a performance like last night. And then we go to Game 6 in Milwaukee, where the Bucks have been very, very, very tough this year. And whenever you go on the road, your role players have a history of not performing as well as they do at home. Let's talk about Durant for a moment and try to put it into context. Let's think about some of the all-time great performances by NBA players in the postseason. Let's think about Clyde 1970 in Game 7. The Willis Reed game, but it's really the Clyde Frazier game. Let's think about Jordan in the flu game, in the NBA Finals in 1997 with 49 and 25 rebounds, Olajuwon in, you know, the Western Conference semifinals in 87 with 49 and 25. Jordan with the flu game in 97. Magic Johnson has always been up there for me in 1980 at 20 years old, stepping in a game six for an injured Kareem Abdul-Jabbar playing center and putting up 42, 15, and 7. There are so many to choose from. Luka last year, they lost that series. Luka with 40. I think he finished 43, 15, and 10, something along those lines. The numbers are astounding. And Luka had the game winner, of course, in that game over the Clippers. The numbers are astounding in some of these individual performances. But think about for a moment the situation that you are in last night. Kevin Durant has played, going into last night, 9 games in his career without one of the following players in the postseason: Harden, Westbrook, Durant, Harden, Westbrook, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and Kyrie Irving. Last night, you're going in thinking you're not going to have any of those guys. Durant in those games was 3-6. They all came back in 2013 when he was a member of the Oklahoma City Thunder. So he goes out there, and he does have Harden, as it turns out, although Harden offensively is not anywhere near what he needs to be to truly be effective. He helps run the offense a bit. But let's call it what it is. He had 8 assists, 9 assists in the game. But it's not like he was out there offering a ton of support. So his next best player in a game against Giannis, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, Brooke Lopez, is Jeff Green. You have another no-show from Joe Harris. You have a broken down yet somewhat effective Blake Griffin, who played all of 1 second in the fourth quarter. Kevin Durant won that game on his own. Jeff Green made sure that this game was still within reach in the first half with how he played in the first 24 minutes. Because if he doesn't come out and score in double figures in the first half, you're in a big, big, big hole. He kept it manageable. 13, 15, it even got to 18 at one point, 17 in the second half, but he kept it manageable. It easily could have been 25 at any point. And if that's the case, it's over. If it ever gets to that big of a number, it is over. I would submit to you that Kevin Durant, given all of the factors with him, may have just given a top three all-time NBA postseason performance. It is all going to depend on whether or not the Nets win this series. And it's unfortunate that that's the case, but it does depend on that because it does become an afterthought when you lose the series. It has always aggravated me when people think about great sports moments, especially in this town, the Starks dunk over what people thought was Jordan, but it was really Horace Grant. Knicks lost that series. Andy Chavez and the catch. Mets lost that game. They're great moments, phenomenal at the time, but they don't necessarily stand the test of time. At least they shouldn't on that same significant level because you don't win. Well, what Durant did last night, I really hope it stands up because the last time I remember truly sitting there and marveling at that kind of performance and seeing a team willed to win by one player on his own was Jordan. You know, I've seen it with LeBron. LeBron, his performance in the NBA Finals 2016, that's right up there. But willed to win a single game like that, it's right up there with Jordan and LeBron in that moment. And it tells you just how good Durant was. Can he, I don't want to say replicate that. I don't know that he has to replicate it in game six. It obviously depends if Harden feels better, if he's a better offensive factor. I mean, he played 46 minutes. He at least got his stretching in and his workout in, even if he couldn't hit a bucket to save his life. I give all the credit in the world to what James Harden did, but frankly, I still think they win the game if James Harden hadn't played because of what Kevin Durant did on an incredibly special level. You can't block the guy's shot. You can't do very much at all to defend him. He is so skilled in every single way. There is not one single club that's not in his bag. Not one shot he can't make. Man, I put it up there. A top three performance. I hope it stays that way. I will take it out if they lose a game. If they lose the series. It comes out then. But it's up there. That was special. 800-919-3776. Where does it rank for you? Did Kevin Durant win you over in New York last night? Because he's never, since he got here, been a popular figure. You know, Knicks, Nets aside, just watching great basketball last night. Did Kevin Durant win you over after he sat out an entire year with an injury? After he missed a bunch of games this year with injuries? Did Kevin Durant win you over? Because the Nets have not been a team that people have wanted to root for. Understandably so. I actually kind of am rooting for them now, the way this has played out. I do love watching the three of them play when they're all healthy together, but what happened last night, it is not something that you get to see often as a sports fan, and you should appreciate it as much as you can when it comes along. Open lines, 800-919-3776. You know me. My name's Chris. Carlin, if you're nasty. But I would invite you to get on the open lines right now. It's a good time to do so. We are just getting started. There's so much to discuss around what happens now in this series when we get to game six tomorrow, on what happens in the rest of the NBA playoffs, and if the coast has just been cleared for the Nets to win a championship, given all the injury news that we are seeing right now. We hit the phones. Where else would you start but Marvin in the Bronx? Marvin, what's up, baby?
What's going on, CC?
Listen, oh, you know.
That I was came late to that game, as I admit, but that was a game for the ages because I was worried about my Yankees, but that's for another subject, all right? Mm. Hey, that game reminds me, and I'll take you back 40 years. Everybody talks about Walt Frazier's seventh game. But in the semifinals, it's the Baltimore Bullets. Willis Reed had a game for the ages that very few people talk about, where he got 36 points and 36 rebounds against Wes Unseld. And that's a special game. No one ever brings that up, but Kevin Durant etched his name into the history books. And that game will be remembered for a long time. This series will go seven games, though.
You think so?
Yeah.
You know, I honestly believe that they will get a win tomorrow night. The Bucks will find a way to win this. I don't think there's any way to really tell about Game 7, although I just don't expect the Nets to lose it at this point.
Neither do I. And I say it'll go 7, but it really surprised me if they lose that 7th game on their home court, you know, because, like I said, you know, there's very few players that you say are unstoppable. Kevin Durant is unstoppable. You can't block that jump shot.
There's nothing you can do to contain this guy. There is truly nothing that you can do to defend him in any reasonable way. And what gets me the most about it is even, Marvin, when you had P.J. Tucker getting in his head a little bit. Last night, non-factor. 7 of 9 when he was matched up against P.J. Tucker. I will say, I got major issues with Giannis. Major issues with Giannis. We'll get to that throughout the course of the show. Matthew is in Manhattan, and he is up next on 98.7 ESPN. Matthew, what's up, bud?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for taking my call. Now, I go back a long way with the Nets, and last night's victory was up there. Probably the second greatest, my greatest net win, if you recall, when the Nets upset the defending world champions when Stan Olbeck was coach. The Sixers were coming off a world championship, and in the fifth and deciding game, Michael Ray Richardson, Otis Birdsong, led the Nets to a great victory. But there's been so many dark moments with the Butch Beard era, the Rolly Massimino, and it just felt really good last night, and of course we got KD as well. So, long-time Net fan, been through a lot, but last night Chris was one for the ages.
You know, Matthew, I was thinking about this with thinking out loud, talking to some friends today, and I couldn't even come up with it with the 2 years in the mid-2000s with Kidd, if they had any individual performances like this on their way to the finals, and I can't think of any.
No, they didn't. And I tell you what, if Kenny Martin didn't have the flu in the fifth game, they probably would probably have won that series in San Antonio. But he was, and they didn't have a center too to deal with. But this is a whole new animal right now. What we got here with the Brooklyn Nets. And growing up in Brooklyn, I followed the team back when they. My dad took me to the games at the Coliseum, and it just feels really good, especially to be the little brother in town as well. So. What happens tomorrow, we'll see. They still got a lot to do tomorrow. And what do you think they're going to do with Harden? They're going to suit him up tomorrow?
Look, if he's healthy enough, and if they played him 46 minutes, and I know it was up to him, and thanks for the call, that they were going to let him decide how much he could give them. If he could play 46 minutes, I'd be surprised if he didn't play tomorrow night. I'd be very surprised if he didn't play in Game 6.
It's Carlin.
I am not building. Sorry. My fat finger hit a button. I just want to know if he's going to be able to give you any more offensively. You know, is he actually going to be able to get a little bit of lift on the jump shot and get going? 800-919-3776. I'll tell you what, like, I've got a cup of coffee going, and I'll take you behind the curtain for half a moment. Lengthier commute today than usual on the way home from South Street Seaport after Barton Hahn earlier today, 12 to 2. So when I got back, took a little nap. Got a little nappy nap in. Nappy nap. And so I got the coffee flowing. I got all my notes for the show tonight. What do I want to talk about? What are the different things you want to hit? And, you know, just getting going here. My hands, like, I'm making little tiny mistakes with these fat fingers that are unbelievable. Like, I'm reaching over, I'm trying to hit one button, I hit another one by mistake, then I hit a button by accident. I'm all over the map. I'm a wreck, and it's only Wednesday. And I'm not complaining about the workload, because, trust me, I love working. And this is barely work. I'm very, very aware of that. It was just the commute today that just kicked my ever-loving ass all over the place. I don't know what it is. I live, as you know, ways away from the city. But today, it's as if Route 1 said, Carlin, the bell tolls for thee. Tito on a car phone is next. 98.7 ESPN. Tito!
What's up, CC, a.k.a. Big Fella? What's going on today, bud?
What do you got, bud? How are you?
I'm doing good. We spoke several times. You even liked a couple tweets, so I appreciate that from you. Big fan. Watching the game yesterday, I'm a Knicks fan. I live in Brooklyn. I live in South Williamsburg. Grew up in Bushwick. Was born a couple blocks away from the Barclays down in Brooklyn Hospital, Fort Greene. I found myself getting into the game and clapping for them. Obviously, I'm a Knicks fan, born, you know, bleed blue and orange. But, you know, with KD, man, that was definitely a special performance, especially with the guys down. Harden being a decoy, you know, definitely needed Jeff Green and you know, Blake Griffin, you know, definitely helped him out. But, yeah, I think in order for the Nets to win either Game 6 or Game 7, we're going to need another one of these special performances from KD. I don't think they'll win unless he scores about probably 40-plus again. And I think he's going to give us another one of these games, because right now he's probably top three player, but probably the greatest basketball player now that's playing, or the greatest scorer. You want to say?
He's absolutely the greatest scorer, and he's a top 3 to 4 scorer all time in NBA history. And thanks for the call, Tito. He absolutely is. He's the greatest scorer in the game right now. Let's call it what it is. He's the best player in the game right now. Kevin Durant is the best player in the game right now. Period. He just can do too many things well. He really can. And when you have a guy like that, that is so physically gifted and can do so many different things still in his prime, it's just, you can't understand what the impact of a guy like that is without watching a game like last night. Because there are not just really good to great players who can go out and do that. You have to be on that super, super, superstar level. Well above the guys who are superstars, but a super, super, superstar. Way, way, way up there. It's on the LeBron level, what he did last night. George and Elizabeth is next, 98.7 ESPN. George, go.
How you doing? How you doing? See, I'm glad you said what you just said, that it's on the LeBron level. And see, that's my issue, that, you know, people are comparing this to LeBron. He had James Harden on the floor. I mean,
but he had an extremely, let's be clear, he had an extremely compromised James Harden on the floor.
I agree. I'm not going to disagree with that. But nevertheless, I think the expectations that people place on LeBron James aren't the same as Kevin Durant. You know, he would have gotten a pass last night if he scored 37 and they lost by 3 or 4 points. He would have gotten a pass. Whereas LeBron, I don't believe, gets the same sort of tone when it comes to him playing and the things that he's done. Even in the Cleveland days, the first time or the second time, as compared to KD. KD is getting a whole lot of praise from this particular performance, and if he's what everybody says he does, this should be a regular thing, not a thing that everybody's so shocked and surprised to see him do.
All right, but let's be clear, George. Hey, George, let's be clear. When we're talking about KD versus LeBron, we're talking about them both in their prime, right? I will obviously take LeBron James every single time. LeBron James talked about how physically gifted KD is earlier. LeBron is the most physically gifted player to ever play outside of maybe Wilt. His ability to do everything that he can do and be his size at 265, 270 pounds and 6'9" is beyond what anyone else has ever been able to do. And that's why when I look at LeBron, I really classify him. It's him and Jordan, and that's it. Everybody else is on another level. But as far as pure scoring, let's at least acknowledge what KD did.
Right. I acknowledge it. It was special. One last question. Yeah. Is KD in your Mount Rushmore of basketball players?
Of all time, no. No. Thanks for the call. No. No, he is not. In the game right now, sure. Absolutely he is. Of all time, he is not. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN at 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. We have spent the first half hour of the show discussing where exactly in sports history, in basketball history, in NBA history, last night's performance from KD actually stands, and if in fact it will stand at that same level if the Nets win this series. We believe, of course, if they do win the series, it stands at that level, but if they lose, is it the same? Because I always take something away from the performance if your team doesn't end up getting it done in the end. And that's why when we talk about Magic Johnson as a 20-year-old doing what he did in 1980 and playing center, playing completely out of position and going for 42-17, I mean, that's out of this world. Last night's performance for KD was out of this world. By the way, how ticked off was KD when he missed that free throw and didn't end up getting 50? Oh, he was so angry. You heard him scream the F word. I mean, he was so ticked off with himself because he knew that was 50. He was looking up on that big board. Where am I here? 49. Okay. And he hit it and he missed the free throw. And he's like, oh, God, he was so mad. So mad. He wanted that 50 burger like you wouldn't believe. And I understand it. But can we spend a minute, just a minute, on how bad Mike Budenholzer and Giannis Antetokounmpo handled last night? Just an idea, Mike. I've never coached the game, never played it on a professional level. I was cut as a freshman. Not like Michael Jordan. I was cut as a freshman. You know why? I sucked. I didn't even know what a pick was at the time. But I can tell you this. When a guy is lighting you up like a Christmas tree, maybe, just maybe, you want to think about doubling him. Just a thought. That for me is from A to B. Maybe you just want to think about doubling him and giving it a chance. How about that? Or another thought. When the guy that has been in Kevin Durant's head the entire series is now not effective against Durant, that little mental game is over, and Durant is 7 of 9 when he's going up against PJ Tucker. Maybe, just maybe, you'd put Giannis on Durant a little bit more. More than to the point where Durant only took 2 shots against Giannis. Are you kidding? Maybe if you're Giannis and you're willing to come out and acknowledge how amazing Durant is, maybe you actually want that challenge. You want all that smoke. You want to get up in his grill and defend him to prove how great you are. Listen to Giannis talking about Durant after the game.
One of the best scorers to ever play the game. It's tough. You know, like, he's the best player in the world right now. And we gotta beat him as a team. We gotta guard him as a team. We gotta make him make tough shots like tonight. We just gotta keep doing our job, and hopefully he's gonna miss.
Giannis, you didn't make him do anything. So when you say we gotta guard him as a team, no, where is it I need to step up more to that challenge? Or how about just showing it that you need to step up more to that challenge? Wouldn't that be more appropriate? You, as one of the greatest players in the game right now, wanting all that smoke. Did not look like it. Did not look like it in the least. And that, to me, I'll tell you one thing. Even if they win this series, there have been a lot of warts that have been exposed in Giannis's game. 800-919-3776. We've got David in Woodbridge. David, you're next up, 98.7 ESPN. Go.
Carlin, Mr. 300, what's going on, man?
How you doing, bud?
Good, good. Mimi touched on it. Giannis, I'm sick of hearing about Fear the Deer, because the deer looked like Bambi last night. You got James Harden on one leg with more missed three-pointers than points. You've got Kevin Durant absolutely demoralizing any defensive player you put in his way. You would think Giannis smells the blood in the water like these great white sharks swimming around LBI, goes, man, let me, as the defensive player of the year and two-time MVP, you know, and the biggest player on the court outside of Brooke Lopez with the best chance of at least distracting Kevin Durant, would come out and do that. You would expect Mike Budenholzer to want to do that. And it's kind of weird. I know Jeff Green lit them up last night too, but come on, man. You're telling me P.J. Tucker can't guard Jeff Green? And you don't want the assignment of Kevin Durant?
Yeah, it bothers me. It bothers me to no end. I mean, when you're that kind of player, like Chris Paul said it, who was he guarding early in the postseason, where it's like, what are you doing? And he had no business, size advantage, all that kind of stuff. Chris Paul said it, though. When you're the man, you want to have to deal with the other team's best player. And right now, Giannis was not acting like the man last night. I'll tell you the other one, too. When you have Harden guarding Giannis in a crucial situation, a severely compromised Harden, and he waves off defensive help, wants to take him on himself, and all Giannis can come up with is a fadeaway jump shot? Are you kidding me? Wow. There have been so many weaknesses shown in Giannis's game this series.
It's all I've seen from Giannis is pass first, Blake Griffin giving him 5 feet of space because I'm letting him shoot every time. Let's be serious.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what? It seems like the only outside of, you know, just bulldozing his way into the lane, it's just buckets in the paint. That's really all he's got right now.
But that's all he should need. They can't stop him inside. There is no reason for him to shoot an outside shot. None. None whatsoever. And they're openly disrespecting you, and that's fine. Take it as disrespect, but also understand there's a reason they're doing it. Thanks for the call, David. You can't hit the broadside of a barn. I mean, you are absolutely lost from the outside. You are Philip Seymour Hoffman in Along Came Polly. Raindrops! Old school! Come on. Lonnie, Long Island. Lonnie. Oh, Lonnie.
My man, Chris Carlin. How are you, buddy? I miss you.
It's been a minute, Lonnie. What do you got?
Okay, I got a couple of things. I got a Yankee. I got something about Durant. Durant's the best player in the world. I'm going to tell you, he's the best player in the world. I can't understand how can they leave the best player in the world off the three All-NBA. He's not there. I don't understand. Mitchell's not there.
That has to do with the amount of games that he played. That's what it has to do with.
Okay. Okay. All right. Now, my Yankee
Donovan question. Mitchell, not to be honored, you know, is more of a disgrace.
Yes, he should be on. He's the best guard, I think, besides Curry in the league. But anyway, getting to the Yankees. These guys, why are they swinging at pitches a foot out of the strike zone? Judge, I mean, he could be a great hitter if he stops swinging at those balls a foot out of the strike zone. What is the – I mean, the coach, doesn't he tell him this? Boom.
He shouldn't have to, should he?
Well, you should talk to your hitters. Talk to them. Look, why are you swinging at stuff a foot out of the strike zone?
Of course,
I mean,
they're talking about it.
You don't talk to these guys?
Lonnie, of course they're talking about
it. Yes.
But when you're at the plate, that kind of thing's going to happen. I mean, you're really going to complain about Judge this year?
Well, a little bit.
Yeah, Lonnie, that's not the way. Listen, I'm with you. Judge, to me, is the guy that you look at that I think is overrated simply because of his inability to stay healthy. Not overrated by his abilities in the least. And for me, he is not even remotely the guy I can get on this year. Not close.
Okay. I'm going to take it from the man, then. You're the man, Chris.
In fact, I am, Lonnie. Thanks for the call. Glad you pointed that out. Right now, time for the Truly Hard Seltzer Play of the Game. Brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Just moments ago, Jacob DeGrom delivered yet again with an RBI single. He now has 6 runs batted in on the year and has allowed 4 earned runs on the year. As that ERA continues to drop, it came in tonight at 0.56. That, your Truly Hard Seltzer Play of the Game, brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Try Truly Hard Seltzer. 100 calories, 1 gram of sugar, 5% alcohol, 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Beverage Company. Please drink responsibly. I want to spend a few minutes on the sticky stuff and all that stuff because I do think what Tyler Glasnow had to say about Major League Baseball and about how he believes the lack of being able to use any sticky stuff for his grip played a major role in his injury, which was a small tear of the ulnar collateral ligament. They say right now that the injury does not require surgery. However, we saw a guy like Masahiro Tanaka pitch with that injury, you don't know that he's going to be able to continue to do that. With right now, Glasnow is on the IL. Here is Glasnow yesterday with part of his ramp against Major League Baseball.
I 100% believe that contributed to me getting hurt. No doubt, without a doubt. I have used sticky stuff before. It's ridiculous that, like, it seems like this whole public perception of, like, oh, just like select few people. Like, your favorite pitcher probably 50 years ago was using something too. In the past, my like substance of choice is sunscreen and rosin. Like, just nothing egregious, something to where I can get a grip on the ball so it doesn't feel dusty. But two starts ago against the Nationals, I went cold turkey, nothing. I don't use sticky stuff I don't use spider tack. I don't need more spin. I have huge hands. I spin the ball fine. I want grip. I did well against the Nationals, probably one of the best starts I had all year. I woke up the next day and was like, I am sore in places that I didn't even know I had muscles in. Like, I felt completely different. I switched my fastball grip and my curveball grip. I've thrown it the same way for however many years I've played baseball. I had to put my fastball deeper into my hand and grip it way harder. And I had to, instead of holding my curveball at the tip of my fingers, I had to dig it deeper into my hand. So I'm like choking the all my pitches. Waking up after that start, I was like, okay, this sucks. Something is weird here. And then that same feeling is persisting all week long. And then I go into my start yesterday and that same feeling just, it pops or whatever the hell happened to my elbow. Like, I feel it. Something happens. And I'm sitting out there just like, you got to be kidding me. Whether you want us to not use sticky stuff or not is fine. Fine. Do it in the off season. Give us a chance to adjust to it. But I just threw 80 something, 70 whatever innings. And then you just told me I can't use anything in the middle of the year. I had to change everything I've been doing the entire season. Everything out of the window. I have to start doing something completely new. And then I'm telling you, I truly believe that's why I got hurt. Me throwing 100 and being 6'7" is why I got hurt. But that contributed.
That tells me everything I need to know. And I'm not saying that it's definitive that that happened, that the injury happened because of it. But what I will tell you is this. There are no greater creatures of habit than Major League Baseball starting pitchers. They have a routine. They don't want it messed up. And when you try to do something to make a major alteration in the middle of the season, it is incredibly inconvenient for them. And when I say inconvenient, not like, oh, poor you. No, I mean, like, you're changing everything about what they're doing because you feel the need to try to correct a problem. Well, how many people do we need to hear from about the sticky stuff to understand that there is a big difference between spider tack and using rosin and sunscreen to grip the baseball? Jerry Blevins came on the show the other day, talked about this. Terry Collins came on the show the other day, talked about the importance of having control over the baseball when these guys throw 100 miles an hour. And if a little bit of pine tar, if a little bit of rosin mixed with sunscreen is going to make that big of a difference, you really need to convince me why you can't figure out what the difference is. Why you can't be able to train umpires to look at substances and tell the difference and say, this is spider tack, this is illegal, this is pine tar, this probably shouldn't be illegal. You're going to go after it in the middle of the year. I'm not telling you to change the rule about making something legal in the middle of a year. What I'm saying is, don't do it now. Don't do it now. Why are they doing it now? You've heard me say this, and it's what makes all of this all the more frustrating. They are doing it now because baseball screwed up by messing around with the ball itself this year. You want to talk about how they're trying to get it back to leveling the playing field, so to speak, because the ball was too juiced up before and we saw too many home runs. That's fine. I understand that mentality. But when you come out and you've done that in the offseason and it's so clear that there's a major advantage for pitchers the following year, you can't ask the pitchers to completely change what they're doing because of your mistake. If you're not going to enforce it, which you haven't for years, unless it was blatantly obvious and everybody knows it, then you should not all of a sudden decide to do it then. It's almost like, and I know that this is not always the case, okay? But there are times when police officers have to go out and hand out more tickets toward the end of the month or the year because they have certain quotas on tickets that they're supposed to reach, which is, you know, absurd to begin with. But this is baseball screwing up and then going and asking pitchers to change everything they do when they're in the middle of the year. And this is the craft that they have. And you're asking them to completely change the way they do it? I do believe that Tyler Glasnow thinks that he absolutely suffered this injury because of it. Whether or not that's true, physically, I don't know. But I know that Tyler Glasnow, in his head, is probably trying to figure out how to snap off some of his pitches and how to control some of his pitches better. And when it's messing with you in the moment in your mind, then you have to appreciate the fact that that can have a physical impact on you. It absolutely can. Because you're thinking about trying to do it differently, then you turn and maybe you twist it a little bit differently, and what happens? You get hurt. It's insanity. It's pure insanity. And it's baseball trying to fix a mistake that they made by blaming somebody else. And I absolutely hate it. And there's one last in the weeds kind of aspect of this that you should understand because you are going to care about it in about 6 months. They did this without talking to the players. They did this without really giving them much of a heads up. It was a unilateral decision. It again sets the tone for what is going to be an incredibly acrimonious collective bargaining agreement negotiation. I am wholeheartedly of the belief that next season, we are either going to have a lockout or a strike of some sort. And it's going to be ugly and it's going to be prolonged. Because these two sides hate each other right now and there's too much to be proven. Rob Manfred has to win. Rob Manfred has to win. This is what he does in negotiations. He has to win. And the players, they have a leader that they re-upped after he made a terrible deal the last time around in Tony Clark. And now it's on Tony Clark to not get the players screwed over. When there's that much pressure on both sides, they are going to dig in. It's going to be ugly. And this, again, proves how bad the relationship is. Proves how much the owners don't believe this is a partnership in any way. It's crummy for the game from pillar to post in all that is going on.
Breaking news.
Jacob deGrom is officially done after three perfect innings and eight strikeouts. In comes Sean Reed Foley for the fourth inning. Following the top of the third, DeGrom immediately went down the clubhouse tunnel, followed by a trainer. I don't even know what to say. I mean, the only thing that comes to my mind is, why did you believe him? Why did you believe him? Okay, so his MRI came back clean. I get that. He says the next day he feels fine. We know this is a remarkable competitor. We know this is a guy that's never going to ask out of any situation. And we know that this is a guy that will not tell you exactly how he is feeling. Why did you believe him? Too many times over the years, we have seen garbage like this happen with the New York Mets. Too many times. Oh, he's not that bad. We'll run him back out there. No big deal. Says he feels great. And the next start, again. Again, down. I mean, oh, by the way, Rizzo just went upper tank. Why? Why? Why would you believe him? Why wouldn't you just be smart? You got the MRI. I understand that it was clean. But when the guy tells you that his flexor in his elbow is sore, you have to exercise every possible caution that you can when you are talking about the best pitcher in baseball. Your season has been fantastic for 2.5 months. We know what level of competitor Jacob DeGrom is, and yet you still choose to believe him. You can't let your eyes dictate what you're seeing. Somebody in between here had to see that maybe something wasn't quite right with him if after the third inning tonight, he's done. You know, we can talk all about throwing in between starts and bullpen sessions. They don't have remotely the same intensity that an actual game has, especially for somebody like this. What's he going to tell you? I feel fine. I'm good. I mean, holy crap. Be smart. Take it easy. How do you continue to do this? Why doesn't somebody say, you know what? Let's be safe. Let's take the decision out of his hands. Let's be cautious. Let's be smart. Why is that so wrong? Why? I don't get it. How can one team continue to make the dumb mistakes when it comes to injuries? How is that possible? You know, this whole season had been rather un-Metsian with on-the-field problems. Well, we're catching up now, aren't we? When we're going to have a guy who is putting together one of the great seasons in the history of the game go down and you let him go out there and make his next start on regular rest because the MRI came back clean. You know what? Maybe you need a new MRI machine wherever you're taking him. Maybe that one's busted. Maybe the technician is eating a ham sandwich while he's taking it. You can't continue to make these dumb mistakes. Dumb, dumb, dumb. Now Sean Reed Foley or Foley Reed, whatever the hell his name is bouncing the ball to the plate. And you're out, Jacob DeGrom. And I'm looking at a shot of Luis Rojas right now, who's just kind of shaking his head no. No. The answer is yes, Luis, yes. The organization is that stupid. Why? What's wrong with exercising caution in June? In June. We're not in October, it's June. You know, in the postseason in 86, Bobby O got on a plane and went down and got an injection in his elbow so he could go out there and pitch. Pitchers aren't giving up the ball unless you rip it out of their hands. The great competitors, they're not doing it. They're going to tell you they feel fine. It's your job to understand when you believe them and when you don't. It scares the hell out of you from get-go when this happens last week. Well, everything is fine. Everybody is Leslie Nielsen in the Naked Gun while the entire town is burning down behind you. Andy Martino just texted me, DeGrom shoulder soreness. Great. Grand. Fantastic. It may not be the same injury, but one can lead to the other. When you're overcompensating for one thing, you could screw something else up. And I don't want to go from A to Z too quickly. But Andy was on here not 20 minutes ago or a half hour ago when I asked him about the historical context of the season that DeGrom is putting together. And he said, can we get him through the season from a healthy standpoint? He's using his fastball and he's using just the slider and breaking it off. It's a little similar to what Matt Harvey was doing. What? You know what Matt Harvey did? Thoracic outlet syndrome. Shoulder. Never the same. Never the same. I'm not saying that's what this is, but holy crap. Just be smart. Just be smart. Jeff Passan confirms the same thing. Why? What is the harm in having somebody miss a start? The guy who has been the crown jewel of your organization for years, and finally you are backing him up by scoring some actual runs. He's having an unbelievable season, a historical season. What statistically could end up being the greatest season for any starting pitcher ever. And you believe him. You believe he's 100% okay after that last start last week. Stop it. Just exercise caution. How difficult is that? No. No problems here.
Remain calm. All is well. All is well.
Yeah, no, it's not.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.